Blog Talk Radio.
There were some clouds, they were rolling through the sky, and they brought down all the rain. And there was a puddle that became a pond as it gathered up so much rain. Little seed close by grew into a tree as it soaked up so much rain.
Hello there, Blog Talk Radio world. This is Thomas, your host of The Philosophy Show. Today is July the 7th, 2016. This is episode number 146, and it's 12:30 a.m. Wednesday night, Thursday morning, Eastern Standard Time. So show is pretty standard every Wednesday night for half an hour. It's a call-in show. You can call in, area code 646-929-1344. If you'd like to call in, share a show idea, talk about philosophy or anything else, it's area code 646-929-1344. And so today's episode, I titled it Fairness, Free, Complain, Protest, Reform, and Renaissance and Life. And so I don't want to sound like a complainer here, but, you know, maybe we complain too much. Maybe we don't complain enough. No one likes to hear a complainer. I know I don't like to hear a complainer. Sometimes it gives me a headache. But at the same time, I don't like the conditions in this world. And so, you know, you want to do something about it. And what can you do about it? You know, like some people, for example, could say, you know, love it or leave it. Yeah, that's a losing proposition, because you can't really leave anything nowadays unless if you want to go to some kind of war-torn, you know, third world place where it's even worse. I mean, a long time ago you could leave it. People did leave it. They went to the New World. And people could, you know, if you look at like Google Maps or something, I mean, there's a lot of land that's open. You could try to go to some place like that, like the Appalachian Mountains or the Rocky Mountains or some rainforest or something, and live amongst Bigfoot. But you'll probably get a fine and a penalty and zoning restrictions and things like that if you're ever found. And plus, it would be hard to get away from the internet and clean water, electricity, heat, AC, you know, communicating with the world, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there are things that we like, that we take for granted, that we want, and it's kind of like you want your cake and eat it too, and but there have been times in this world where people haven't put up with stuff, and, you know, like the Renaissance, they changed a whole lot, and they had to fight and die for it. And that's life. And so, and the goal is, because people, you know, fundamentally, fairness, you could say that sounds egalitarian, which is that a bad thing? Is fairness a bad thing? And, now, everyone wants reform, and everyone wants renaissance, but is the best way complaining, protesting, you know, how to get there? I mean, sometimes complaining is appropriate, but honestly, if you really want to change the world, you're going to have to run for Congress in this system that we have. I mean, that's your main choice, or, you know, I mean, there are people who have changed the world, like Martin Luther King, both of them, Martin Luther and Martin Luther King Jr. and Jesus and Gandhi, and people have changed the world, and hasn't been easy. I mean, unless if you're happy with the status quo, but let me just try to introduce an idea that the status quo is not good enough. I mean, it is like we are in a third world country, even in the first world country, compared to what life could be about. You know, it'd be like being in a relationship you don't even really want to be in. I mean, how many people settle for less? And I think it's sad. And by them having that low expectation for themselves, it's dragging all of us down. They're like scabs in a sit-out for, you know, a union demonstration or something. They're like people that settle for less are like scabs who are, what do you call it when a union people like boycott working or something? I forgot what it's called now, but you know what I mean. So all these people that have low expectations, they're going to vote for Trump or Hillary or whatever else their low expectations are, thinking that, you know, they're scabs for the rest of us, because, you know, right now it's an employer's market per se, not an employee's market. They know there's plenty of people looking. So, you know, what incentive do they have to offer anything better? Now, you could say, oh, well, you don't have to depend on anyone. You can start your own business. Yes, but you have to get a loan to do that, or already have a lot of money. And if you already had a lot of money, you're probably already set. So you have to get a loan. In order to do that, you have to build up credit. You have to work. Which I'm not, I mean, of course you have to work, but can you keep the profits of your work? I mean, even if you're poor, about 50% of your income's taken. So, and then you have to have some shelter and have utilities and things like that, even at a bare minimum standard of living. You have to have shelter. You can't just, even the lowest rents, because you're not allowed to just build on empty property that no one's using. And so that's what we strive for reform is, what I strive for reform is not to guarantee anyone any results, but to have a fair game. And that's really the essence of it all. I mean, what use is playing a game if the referee is, you know, the father of someone on the other team, you know, the other team's goalie or whatever's dad or mom or something, and or their cousin or their twin brother or sister. I mean, you know, or the judge in a case is related to, you know, who you're against. I mean, it really, you know, or the people you're competing against have paid and bought politicians to create regulations so you can't compete against them without having $1 billion. So now a lot of people don't even know what is unfair. I mean, to them, they just, I think, like, just take it the way it is. And one thing is, if you're not hurting anyone else, you should be able to do what you want. You know, you should not have to live your life in fear if you're not harming anyone else. Yeah, if you have bad intentions and you plan on ripping other people off, you should live in fear of not being able to do that to others. You know, you shouldn't be able to touch anyone else, harm their lives, do no harm. You know, you shouldn't be able to harm anyone. And if you plan on doing that, you should be in fear of those consequences of what would happen if you were to do that. But the way the system is now is they consider you not buying from them doing them harm. Now, that's not, we have to really define what doing harm is. I mean, if I was a corporation, a big multinational corporation, I could buy politicians and, you know, I was at the top of the pyramid. And if I considered you listening right now, not buying my product as doing harm to me, and if you're going to talk other people from not buying my products, even though you might be saying the truth, and if you're not planning on buying my products, then I consider you doing harm, then that's totally wrong, and that's not fair, right? I mean, I can convince others to buy my stuff voluntarily, but so, of course, that's ludicrous to think that would be doing me harm if you weren't buying my stuff voluntarily. But that really is the situation that we're in right now, because big businesses have created regulations to prevent newcomers from coming in, and they have caused laws where you have to buy their stuff or else. You know, it might not be illegal not to buy their stuff, but they're going to offer, give you an offer you can't refuse, in other words. And so let's think about it this way. I mean, if we are really in a fair game, I mean, what's fair? Sometimes it's good to just get back to basics, fundamentals, and really think about what's fair. I mean, it's really the whole start of this whole game is unfair for a lot of people, for most people. I mean, I guess it's kind of more than fair if you're born into a silver spoon inserted into your mouth and, you know, millions or billions of dollars or et cetera. I mean, you're going to have advantages. That's not fair either. Now, I'm not against people becoming millionaires if they earn it, and billionaires, et cetera. But think about it this way. If you're not harming others, you should be able to do what you want, you know, and be able to compete in this world and offer your services as long as you're not hurting others. And you have to really define that, what's hurting others. I mean, the government considers it, and I'm not against the government per se or public options or taxes or, you know, all that. I'm just saying, if you look at it, you know, if you don't pay the government the taxes, then you're harming them and you're not buying their products, you know. Now, I do believe we could have a voluntary government. I believe we don't even need taxes. We could have a guaranteed annual income and have a printing press. Anyways, I've written an article on that, very detailed. Don't have enough time on this show to get into that. I've had a couple of past shows on that as well. You can Google guaranteed annual income, an idea whose time has come, and look in the Tom Hartman message boards, and you'll find my article there under Libertarian Progressive. It's the most capitalist and the most progressive idea there is. Totally anti-inflation, anti-stagflation, anti-deflation. It's just very consistent. But anyways, let's get back to this main subject. What's fair, what would be fair is if I could, in this short little blip of a lifetime we have on this earth, you know, hopefully 100 years, which is hardly anything, you know, as long as I leave it as good or better than how I came into it, then I'm not harming anyone else. You know, I haven't polluted anything. If I decided to use a plot of land that no one's ever going to use, and I create a house made of totally biodegradable materials, metal, concrete, wood, it doesn't take up a whole lot of space, isn't ugly, you know, tap into a well, have a solar system, etc. I mean, and any plastic I have, I offer to recycle it. I keep everything all organized. And if I die, when I go to the other place, I leave everything so it could easily be demolished or reused or whatever, then I haven't hurt anything. Should I have to pay property taxes on that property? Should I have to, not to say I necessarily wouldn't, but I have to get money to pay those taxes. But what if I grow my own food? What if I barter? And so I guess I could trade some of the food for the money, but where does the money come from to pay those taxes? It has to come from a bank. All the money is created by a bank, so I have to go within the system. And that means I'm going to be forced into a 40-hour work week at a job I don't like. You consider half the jobs probably at least that people have is stuff that they hate. Dead-end jobs that have no meaning. When you consider you only have 24 hours in a day, and 8 of those hours a day, a third of it is to sleep, another third is to work, and for most people, like 70% of people, if you look in polls, are in jobs they don't like. Blessings to the 30% who do have jobs they like. I mean, they're just meaningless things. I mean, if you look at all this, there are very much meaningful stuff. iPhones, stereos, stuff, but there's a lot of meaningless stuff, Power Rangers, for example. I mean, there's just lots of meaningless stuff here, and, we have a caller, and I'm going to bring them in about 4 minutes. I'm just going to kind of finish my little rants here, but, and it keeps the system going. It's because we're in a pyramid scheme where we have to keep on bringing in more and more consumers, because when you're in a pyramid scheme, in order to bring in more money into the system, you have to have more consumers, you have to have more people investing, and you have to keep the population growing. It's like musical chairs. And so, again, if you really want to make a change in this world, you're going to have to run for probably in this system that we have here, Congress, or become like a Gandhi or something like that, if you care and if you want to make a difference. But let's see what caller has to say here. And let me just, I think there's a little bit of a delay, but I'm going to make him live here. All right, just bear with me. Oh, all right, here we go. All right, well, hey, welcome to the Philosophy Show at blogtalkradio.com/philosophy. How are you doing this evening, and what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I wanted to find out what your show was about.
Hey, this is Joseph.
You right? Got it. Mm-hmm.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
Yeah, today's kind of a free-for-all. I mean, we're just talking about the main points: fairness, freedom, complaining, protest, reform, renaissance, life.
So you're just doing a free-form show. Anything that comes to mind, you talk about.
Well, we're talking about how to make a difference, whether complaining is going to get you anywhere, whether people are, what's the right balance, I guess. And so I'm just kind of making a suggestion that if you think the system's messed up, if you think it's unfair fundamentally, if you think there's more to life than working at a dead-end job that you don't care about, because if you look at, when you ask someone, like, what do you do for a living, there's a 70% chance they're doing something that they don't care about, according to polls, at least, and I do trust the polls. Most people are in a dead-end job that they really don't care about. They're only doing it to do other things, and so if you really want to make a difference in this world, I mean, you're going to have to do something. And complaining is one thing, but people get tired of hearing complaints. But you do have to complain to a certain point. But you're going to have to run for Congress or some kind of thing, or you're going to have to be like a Gandhi or a Jesus or a Martin Luther King. And that's going to be a lot of, those might be harder work, but you're at least going to have to put yourself out there, and complaining is not going to do too much.
Well, again, as you said, complaining to a point. So, do you have any suggestions about what to do to change the world around?
Yeah, run for Congress. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, plastic molded cast politicians that are, you know, I mean, we have about 500 members of Congress or so in our governments nationally and, you know, many more times in each state. And they have such a, they have like a 5% approval rating. I mean, where do these people come from? I mean, they come right out of the, you know, human resources department of corporations, basically. And, you know, these are the people that ran for, like, class president when you're in high school and stuff. Not to say everyone, and I'm just talking in generalities here, but basically, I mean, they're not in tune. You know, they're living in a bubble, and I think people, you know, really are going to have to, in this system that we have now, I mean, you can try to opt out, you can reform, but you're going to end up probably in jail, unless if, so you have to kind of, in order to beat the system, you don't have to join the principles of the system, but you do have to, you know, try to do something. I mean, I guess the best way is, you know, whoever's listening out there, run for office. I mean, you're not, probably not going to win, but, you know, maybe after your fifth attempt, people just after name recognition will eventually just start to recognize your name and they'll finally just give you a chance or something.
I wouldn't recommend running for office because I won't do anything. So if you're one person amongst hundreds of other contaminated human feces, you're not going to do anything. Ron Paul.
Well, no. If you're just, you could do something. I mean, you could have a bully pulpit. You could bring a lot of attention. You know, you could make news. You could grab the attention of the media. You know, and you can encourage other people to run. I mean, yes, it would require lots and lots of people doing this, of course.
Yeah, it would require a clean sweep of Congress altogether. No, 450 members would have to leave at the same time and be replaced by honest people.
Well, it would require a majority. So if there's 450 members, you know, you'd need about 300 or so.
Yeah, same difference.
You're right. So I'm not just saying one person to do it or me to do it, which maybe someday I will. Maybe in 2020 or something like that, but I think everyone out there's lots of people who want a change. I mean, if you look at a stadium full of people who go to a Bernie Sanders rally, for example, or people who go to a Ron Paul rally or whatever, I mean, there's even just in that one stadium is a lot of people. I mean, and you'd have to think that's representative of, you know, millions of people across the entire country. I mean,
you're all waiting for somebody else to do something else. And that's what
I'm saying. And the easiest thing that they could do is at least just run for Congress. I mean, even if they don't win, they could give other people an option. They could, you know, depending on how clever they are, maybe get in a debate or two and just bring some issues out there. It's going to be a period of time, but maybe after a few decades, you know, we could kind of turn it around.
Well, no, I don't think we have time within a few decades. I think within a few decades, transhumanism will be here, and the people who rule the planet will eventually pull the trigger and try to own the entire planet at the expense of everybody else.
Now, you mean transhumanism just for the elites or for everybody?
No, not for us, only for the scumbags. I don't call them elites.
I wouldn't mind some bionic.
Well, neither would I, but it's not going to be available.
It's not going to be available to us. Yeah, so yeah, just to be clear, you mean I don't have anything, honestly, against individuals wanting to
enhance
themselves.
Neither do I.
But I do have a problem with only an elite class being able to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Especially when...
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they'll be the only ones who can afford it.
Do you think that's the way it's going to... You think we're all doomed?
Of course.
So if you think we're all doomed, what do you have to lose by running for Congress?
A lot of time. If you're all doomed, you have to do it... If you're going to reverse the situation, you have to do it the right way. Now, the only way that I know of that would reverse the situation would be to get rid of a wall of the people in Congress. The only way to do that would be one fell swoop. And that would be to influence millions of Americans to get rid of their particular congressmen and senators and replace them with somebody else. Somebody who would be hopefully honest, and we don't know how honest they all would be, but somebody who's not a Democrat or a Republican or a career politician. It's a very easy goal, but people don't want to pursue it because people are stupid and people are brainwashed.
So you kind of, I mean, in a way, you could almost think of it as like, what if we knew a meteorite was going to hit the Earth in 10, 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically how... I mean, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but that's kind of a similar scenario of how you're seeing the future, right?
Yeah. In 20 years, technology will be advanced enough for the scumbags, the really rich people of the planet who control the planet and control the military and central banks of all the countries. They'll say, ah, now it's time.
So they're going to make the Old Testament of the Bible like reality, and they're going to pretend they're God, and we're going to be the people who are going to be scared of like being electrocuted
by the
finger of God. I mean, in a sense, I mean.
Okay, in a sense, maybe. I don't know. It will be probably more like Hunger Games, but it's a very logical conclusion. If you have all the money in the world, and what else are you going to get? What else are you going to buy? You've bought everything. You've got the yacht. You've got the jet planes. You've got the control of politicians. What else do you want? You want immortality.
You become like Caligula or something, I guess. Once you already
Caligula,
own it all.
Caligula, Nero, Caesar, all of them. All of them wanted immortality. That was their goal. They were crazy enough to believe that somehow, some way, they could achieve the level of being a god. Now, the only way to do that is if there is a real god who's going to bestow upon you, you know, godlike powers, which isn't going to happen. Or you could merge with plastic and steel and with an android, and in 20 years, people are predicting that the computers will be sophisticated enough that you could upload your brain into a computer. You'll have your personality, your thoughts, your images, your memories, and you can take over a brand new body that way.
Now, what do you think about that guy? Who's the guy that owns Tesla? What's his name? Do you know who I'm talking about?
It's not Elon Musk, is it?
Yeah. Do you think he's a good guy, or do you think he's part of
the
elite?
He's a globalist. Nah.
Yeah. I was thinking he was a good guy. I don't know. I mean, I was just kind of, you know, sometimes I get some hope. Like, you know, some of those guys must be, what I would think of as a nice future is like Star Wars or something without, you know, the Darth Vader and stuff. But like, you know, I mean,
no,
the
Star
more
Trek.
People you have, the more inventors you're going to have. Like, now you could say, I have it all. Jet planes, yachts, etc. But that's kind of short-sightedness because there is more, and the only way we're going to get into space and, you know, there's a whole universe to explore. And if not to say that these elitists are rational in their thinking, but if they were actually rational in their thinking, you would think that they would, you know, they need people to build the spaceships. They need people.
No, they don't need people.
And they need people to repair the robots.
The robots will repair the robots. We have programmers right now who are programming their own demise. They are programming programs so that machines will become more and more autonomous. Autonomous machines I have no problem with, except for the fact that they're going to drive everybody, you know, on the unemployment.
And they're probably also going to kill, they're probably going to kill the elite as well. Eventually.
Well, that's, see, that's the one danger. If you go from an autonomy, from the autonomous machines, to a true artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Now, the artificial intelligence movies that have been out here already, like Transcendence, and I think there's another one. They don't really depict artificial intelligence as dangerous as
it is. I had a show on this, and it's one of the shows where I didn't have too many listens on it when I looked at the stats, but the show was how to prevent, you know, artificial intelligence or something from taking over, and the one solution I had to that was to design an artificial intelligence and program it to become a philosopher.
Well, it will be philosophical. It automatically will become philosophical, absorb all the information on the planet via the internet. It'll scoop it up in seconds. It will assimilate it. It will digest it. It will come to nearly infallible conclusions, and it will be philosophical.
Well, and if, I mean, I think, and this is just from, you know, a human 21st century brain, but, I mean, the highest philosophy, I think, is, you know, basically the golden rule. I mean, so do unto others you don't want as you want others to do unto you. I mean, you know, there's, it's a waste of time to harm others if they're not harming you. And and fairness in the game. And so if an artificial intelligence, you know, as smart as book smart as it could be, but if it could also understand philosophy, and you know, it might, if it truly, like, understood philosophy, it could, I mean, be good, I guess. It could. I'm not saying it would, but it could.
I don't know if it could. Let's say it could. Let's say it could. That would be the greatest boon to mankind if it were good. But it has no all. It has no incentive to be good.
Well, that's why we have to program it to be a philosopher.
You can't program artificial intelligence once it's reached critical mass of being truly self-independent. Yeah, that means you can't have a machine that's completely independent from humans and then have it be programmed by humans. It would defy its own purpose.
Well, at the same time, we can't prevent it from doing that either, because the same thing is, we couldn't prevent we wouldn't want anyone else to prevent us from possibly doing it, or our descendants from possibly doing that either, because you could say human is artificial intelligence. 100,000 years, if we're able to evolve, we could end up being, you know, that smart.
Well, yeah, we could. The thing is, though, is that I think there are, and this surprises me, I think there are like 30 different companies working on artificial intelligence. So that means our future's doomed, because you're...
Right, it only takes one of them to be the evil scientist.
Now, let's say even if it's not an evil scientist, let's just say it's a very intelligent Einstein on steroids. And he invents this machine that you program it, and as a result, it doesn't need any more programming from humans. It is self-programming.
Right.
That's the entire goal. So it is for all practical purposes, it's a sentient human. It's a sentient being. So what it wants to do is absorb knowledge, which it will do. And you're talking about, if it were good, you know, there wouldn't be any reason for it to harm others, right?
Well, even if it's programmed to seek the truth, which is good, I mean, the truth, to me, hopefully, is not conflicting with good. I mean, so the golden rule, I would hope, I mean, and I, you know, I have limited knowledge, but I mean, that is the most efficient. Efficiency doesn't conflict either with, you know, the truth and good.
Well, I was about to get to that.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You know people who are good, at least you know people who are better than others, or some people who may be at the top of the ladder of being good. I presume you do, right? Maybe priests, rabbis, people like that, or people in your own family. Right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think so.
All right. So do they, as good people, do they kill roaches, mice, rats, rodents?
Well, I know they at least think about it. I mean, the people that I admire at least would have to at least think about it. They wouldn't want anything, no matter how small, to suffer unnecessarily. I mean, if they were, like, there's a difference. Like, if you're stuck on an island and you have nothing to eat, that's one thing. But if you have the ability to avoid causing harm unnecessarily, at least that's, like, the lowest level of good, I guess you could say, or at least you're getting towards that area of good. So if you don't have to harm something else and to do it unnecessarily, you know, that would be bad, of course. So
yeah.
It's whether what necessitates or whatever.
Yeah. So, but do they hurt flies? Stomp on roaches? Get rid of termites?
Get rid of termites. Yeah. That's. Well, I mean, it now there's a conflict of whether it's you or them. I mean, if it's not a conflict of whether it's you or them, that's
good
a different
point.
Situation, I guess.
Yeah, good point. So, to get rid of termites, that means if you don't do anything about it, they'll destroy the foundation of your house, and eventually your house will come crumbling down. So, if you have artificial intelligence, which is 1,000 times more intelligent than any human being ever will be at that particular time, he may or she may or it may consider us rodents. Now,
it could.
Yeah. And if it considers us rodents, doesn't necessarily mean that it will try to destroy us, but what if the rodents become fearful of the artificial intelligence and they try to destroy the artificial intelligence?
So we would have to hope that the artificial intelligence could differentiate between the good and the bad termites, you know? I mean, so, like, people aren't going to go out into the woods and try to search and destroy termites. They're only going to do it to the ones that are directly affecting their homes, and hopefully in the future they would try to build out of concretes and stuff like that instead.
Yeah, that could be a good hope, but what
I mean, there are vegetarians, there are people that are vegans that don't do it just for health, but they do it because they do it because they don't want to cause suffering.
True, there are people like that, and then again, there are psychopaths, so who knows how this artificial intelligence is going to turn out.
And one big question is, does anyone have a right to bring in, like, another life? I mean, does someone have a right to bring in a genetically modified, you know, individual that would have, enhancements?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you could answer that, you could also answer, then, if we can bring in people with enhancements, then would it not be wrong to bring in people without those enhancements, you know, giving someone a underhanded or giving someone a disadvantage if we know that we could bring them in with all the advantages. I mean, so, and, you know, and actually, have you heard of, and this is kind of fun, and I'm not saying I subscribe to this necessarily, but I do see their point. Have you heard of antinatalists, people that think it's wrong to procreates because no one has a right to bring someone else into this world?
I haven't heard of it, but I find the proposition interesting.
It's interesting. I've just actually recently have seen some people's videos on it. There's this one guy called I guess he lives in a place called Mendham, and his YouTube thing is called In Mendham, and he's an interesting character. I don't agree with everything he says, but he has opened my mind to a couple things. And so once we create this artificial intelligence, I mean, we might not even have a right to bring in some kind of sentient being. So, I don't know, just some interesting things to think about as far as that goes.
Well, it kind of is akin to what I've said to people who are extremely poor or who complain about their particular environment and they say they can't get ahead, that the life is stacked against them, and I ask them, then why do you have children if you feel that way? Why are you bringing
right.
your own flesh and blood onto a planet that you feel is doomed from the very start? And they really don't have an answer. So,
I agree with you there. I don't think people should bring... I mean, I don't think there should be necessarily a law against it, except maybe a moral one. But, yeah, people shouldn't bring someone in that's going to be totally disadvantaged. I mean, that's... They wouldn't want to have that,
no.
you know?
And, yeah, and I take a look at midgets. I take a look at people who, who genetically have, let's say, a 98% chance of giving birth to somebody who's a dwarf or a midget or mentally disabled. Why would you want to do that to your own child?
Yeah. Yeah, and those, when I have to really look at, especially you're not bringing them into a fair game. I mean,
yeah.
if someone started the Monopoly game with, a couple $100 more than everyone else and a couple more properties than everyone else, then, what use, or if you started a chess match without the queen, that's no
mm-hmm.
fun.
Yeah. So, it does make for good philosophical arguments. There are people who are wise, and they do plan their procreation. They wait until they're married 3 or 4 years, have their careers going before they know that they have enough money to bring up a child, to send the child to a private school, which is what they insist upon doing, and so that this child can have some decent breaks at the very beginning. I think that's wise planning.
Now,
but,
I almost hear someone arguing the point then, if someone doesn't like it, they could just exterminate themselves. But it's not that easy because they've been brought into this world with feelings and memories and emotions and things like that. So they already have this baggage of
mm-hmm.
some kind of investment that they never intended to invest in necessarily anyways, So
mm-hmm.
so it's not always that easy. But, Well, Joseph, I didn't mean to cut you off there. We got about 3 more minutes before the system's going to automatically shut off. We are in overtime right now, so
okay.
Were you going to say something there?
No. I'll just let you get back to the show and finish up your show with the last 3 minutes, and I'll call in another time. Okay?
All right. Good to talk to you, Joseph. And, I just encourage people, while you're here, you might as well make the best of it. And, if you think the future is going to be like a meteorite that's
mm-hmm.
possibly is going to crash into us anyways, might as well, that might be a refreshing thought, might be a reinvigorating thought. Like, what have you got to lose? I think another thing is, besides the powers that be that are keeping us back, we also have our own inhibitions that are keeping us back, too. Why not run for Congress or something, whoever you are that's listening out here?
Mm-hmm.
it might be already too late this term, but in 2 years from now, I think every single ballot should have somebody on there, multiple people on there, and just giving it a go, and just for the fun of it. Anyways, this has been episode 146 of The Philosophy Show, and thank you for listening. And there is lots of people running for Congress, and that's in the system that we're in right now, to get people that are thinking out of the box. I almost think we could just pick random people out of the phone book, and they'd be better than the people we have now and be more representative. But that's not the system we have now. We don't have rank voting, which is another reform that would be worthwhile. It's not a fair game because you can't just go out and go into a new land and build your own, your own verse, your own little area without it being zoned and et cetera. So anyways, thanks for listening today. We'll be back next week. Take care, and Yeah, and let's see here. What did Timothy used to say?